Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Now, Seattle's capitalists' bundles of cash and red-baiting have been unable to defeat Socialist City Council member Kishana Sawant.
Seattle's Socialist City Councilwoman Kishana Sawant has been subject to repeated corporate-backed attempts to remove her from office, and she just defeated yet another.
City Council member Kishana Sawant, congratulations on triumphing over the recall. Kishana, you were first elected to the City Council in 2013. What do you think is the significance of your having been in the legislature these years since that election? What's the lesson for the left who still remains extremely skeptical about the participation of progressives in the electoral arena?
We have now won 4 elections in the last 8 years. If you count the recall attempt that we defeated this year, to a degree, the skepticism, especially of young people who are getting politicized newly, their skepticism of running candidate for electoral office is completely justified. What do we have on offer for the most part? We have, of course, the Republican Party, which not only has been right-wing and anti-worker and anti-union, now has taken more deeply scary and dangerous reactionary turn. But then you have the Democratic Party is still a political bulwark for the billionaire class and for the most part represents Wall Street interests. In the new progressive wing of the Democratic Party, unable to deliver on any of their promises because they still subscribe to this idea that they have to make peace with the Democratic Party establishment, make peace with big business interests. And I think that is fundamentally the lesson that we have to draw from socialist alternatives experience on the Seattle City Council, is that it doesn't work to make you is a false dichotomy of, oh, well, we'll have movement politics or electoral politics, whether you talk about City Council or U.S. Congress, or you talk about labor movement elected officers or unelected but nonetheless leaders of social movements like Black Lives Matter. In terms of making social change, it will inevitably bring up the question of leadership. How do we have structures and organizations that hold leadership accountable? What kind of political organizations and political parties we need? The other lesson is, contrary to the common meaning, what's being told to us by political pundits, by a liberal political establishment, that we should not rock the boat. And if you want to be an activist, then don't get elected. But if you get elected, then you have to bring a collegial attitude and you have to make peace with other elected officials because they are your co-workers. I think that is deeply problematic. When you get elected as a working class representative, it is not at all the same situation as workers going to work and needing to build solidarity with their co-workers. That is absolute imperative. Unions would not have been built without that idea of solidarity. Working class solidarity in the workplace and on the streets and social movements is the backbone of building any kind of victory. But when you get elected into the halls of government that represent, for the most part, the interests of the capitalist class, you are not there to be a co-worker to those big business representatives. You are there to fight for working people. And that is what we have shown. We have shown a fighting approach where we did not bend to personality or careerist priorities, but instead used a movement-based approach every day in office. And it is through that movement-based approach that we have won the victories we have won, the $15 minimum wage, the Amazon tax, and the unparalleled renters' rights victories.
How would you suggest that the issues that you have raised and the refusal to capitulate in the electoral arena, how does that actually further the education towards a socialist system or mess with people who we know must have boots on the ground to really effectuate change? Or how do you utilize the electoral, the kind of bourgeois electoral struggle in order to further the efforts to accomplish a real social change, a different form of economic structure to benefit the working people?
Many people who may have followed our work in Seattle know that myself and the organization that I'm a part of, Socialist Alternative, we are revolutionary socialists, we are Marxists, which means that it is our scientific analysis of the capitalist system that has led us to the conclusions that the kind of society most of us want actually to see, a society based on solidarity and equality, a society which fulfills needs of ordinary people, all the billions of people, which delivers a way out of the climate catastrophe that we're facing. Such a society is not possible on the basis of capitalism, and that we do need a fundamental shift in the global society, and that the international working class is the force that needs to activate itself and needs to get organized to make that happen. It's not enough to espouse these ideas in theory, but that we have to show in practice what would it take, for example, to begin to address the climate crisis. Number one step is the need to take the big energy corporations into democratic public ownership to be run by and for workers. The problem is that the incentives that exist on a capitalist basis are an obstacle to making any kind of shift away from fossil fuels. But then how do we get to that point? Those of us who are in the Marxist movement have a responsibility to demonstrate to the wider working class what it would take. And what we've also shown is having the faith that the majority of the working class will agree with our approach, that working people and young people are ready to fight, and what's missing is leadership and the strategy. And that is where Socialist Alternative and I and our council office has played a role, which is we are very honest that any reform, whether it is $15 an hour or even something much more far-reaching like Medicare for All, those reforms are going to be very difficult to achieve. It will require a serious fighting movement. It will require the shedding of any illusions in Democratic Party politicians or any idea that billionaires will agree with us if we talk to them nicely, but that it will be successful combat that will achieve them. Continuing on the forefront, not on the sidelines or in the background, but on the forefront, the discussion about how these reforms will not be enough, and that we will need more fundamental shift. And for that, the Marxist movement will need to build itself. And so we are also not shy about urging people to join Socialist Alternative and to join the socialist movement in general.
Well, you've advocated for a millionaire's tax and for a tax on Amazon, also public ownership of a number of large corporations, including Boeing. So would you talk about those issues as someplace that you're starting?
3 days after I was formally elected in 2013, there was a very important event happening in Seattle and Washington State. The historic betrayal of Boeing machinists by the Democratic Party in Washington State. The entire party went hand in glove with the Boeing executives, allowed the executives to take home the single largest U.S. corporate handout to corporations, $9 billion giveaway. Won major concessions in relation to jobs. It required a sellout of the Boeing Machinist Union in terms of pensions and rights for newer workers. I spoke at the rally of the Boeing workers. The workers were absolutely livid at what had happened, but there wasn't a real discussion of what is the alternative. If you demand anything, even if it is as something as small as taxing them to fund our needs, let alone the question of really holding them accountable, they will pack up and take away jobs. It will be destructive to workers. That logic prevails. If you don't agree to these concessions, this is what the Democratic politicians, the governor was Democratic, the House was Democratic, the Senate was Democratic. They all peddled the same snake oil, which, well, you know, we need to give them this because we need to protect your job, because if we don't give them these deals, then they will take jobs away to South Carolina. What happened? Jobs were lost anyway. Boeing has destroyed 13,000 jobs in Washington State. We foretold what was going to happen. We said these jobs are going to be lost anyway, because as long as capitalism is the system around the world, there will always be a race to the bottom. Another section of the national or international working class, which is worse off than us here in Seattle, who will also be told you need to make compromises in order to at least get a job. You know, it's getting a job is better than being unemployed. Then workers in Bangladesh and India and Africa will be fed a similar logic, a never-ending race to the bottom. And we have to break this logjam. And the only way of breaking this logjam is to reject capitalism itself. And the first step is to demand that we don't accept this extortion. If they insist that this is what's going to happen, that we have to give them $9 billion, but then we don't need the bosses. We want to take the company into democratic ownership. Many of the workers who didn't agree with us, and some of them were even angry that we had raised the question of democratic public ownership. This is the job of a socialist, of a Marxist. We have to raise these points. And years later, several workers have come to me and others in Socialist Alternative and said that actually that makes sense, because look what happened. They did take the jobs. And so the only way we can really explain why don't want to make concessions, why we have to fight back, really does relate to explaining the role of capitalism itself. And so in that sense, so actually what makes us the best fighters for reforms, because we explain what is needed to win, and it is connect our logic of how we can win a reform is intricately connected to the logic of capitalism.
You have become well known for pushing on some of the essential issues, such as the raise in the minimum wage. You've talked about setting up a rental limitations and rights and regulations for tenants in Seattle. Talk about what you think you've been able to accomplish, both in terms of some of the bread and butter issues for the working class, and to what extent they were mobilizers politically for a broader sector of the working class.
Our struggle for renters' rights victories in the last 8 years has been a big motivator for the working class, because it has been one of the strongest arenas in which we have won victories. Nothing is an educator as good as actually winning. Then it forces you, as a working person, to examine, wow, this is amazing. We actually won despite that such a David and Goliath victory was won. It forces all of us as working people to sit up and take notice. And the best ones, the most politicized ones, will sit and will really think deeply about it. I want to analyze it. And that has happened over and over again, because we have won multiple victories that were thought of as impossible, taking on the mantle of organizing renters, sometimes even building by building, but also citywide for larger movements like the one we're organizing right now for rent control. It is not enough. We need a nationwide struggle for rent control, for the expansion of social housing by taxing big corporations. And we need the cancellation of COVID debt, because big business and the wealthy should pay for this crisis, not working people. So we have a long way to go. I want to be sober about it. But at the same time, to win renters' rights victories, you have to organize renters. It doesn't fall out of the sky. It doesn't come because I can talk nicely with Democrats and they agree. No, everything we've won has been a fight. Even though there are 8 Democrats on the city council and I'm 1 socialist, it has always started with 1 yes vote, and we ultimately get unanimous victories, not because the Democrats are nice and they agree with us. No, we have to fight tooth and nail and make them understand that they will pay a political price for voting against renters. But that process of organizing has started to inject the understanding of collective struggle. It does end up inspiring workers in the workplace as well. It really forces the discussion. What is it that we need to do as working people in our workplaces and as renters in our homes? Nothing can be accomplished on our own. Instead, if we turned outwards and actually started talking to our neighbors, similar to, workers talking to their co-workers to unionize, then we can win something. And on that basis, on the basis of renters getting organized alongside our office, we have won victories that were thought of as impossible to win. This year also became the year that we won incredible renters' rights victories. It became the most successful year for renters' rights, actually. We won the ban on school year evictions of children and all public school workers. We won the right to a trained attorney if you're facing an eviction, no matter where in the city you live. We won a 6-month notice for any rent increase. Another big one, we won the mandating of landlords to pay 3 months rent to every tenant they end up displacing with a rent increase of 10% or more. I mean, actually having building by building organizing where we won concrete victories, smaller scale victories in individual buildings, and that makes the news. And then we get more renters contacting us saying, can your office come and help us organize in our building? Now, idea of renter organizing is starting to emerge. We have a long way to go, but that's the basis of our victories.
And what about taxing the rich? Proposing a referendum on taxing Amazon. I know that you've been advocating taxes on other large corporations. How's that going?
Last year was crucial for the Tax Amazon movement. We won our second re-elector election in 2019, despite the concerted efforts of the Chamber of Commerce, Amazon, and many of the big executives to try and defeat us, with millions of dollars being poured in to defeat us. We still won the election. On the basis of that incredible victory in 2019, we launched the Tax Amazon movement. The Tax Amazon movement was one of the proudest moments that we have been involved in. A real example of a democratically organized movement where the leadership of the movement was elected by the rank and file of the movement and was held accountable by the rank and file, including a number of public action conferences. We made sure that every important aspect of the struggle was discussed and debated publicly and voted on. It was one of the most crucial decisions we have ever made in a movement. You know, later on in late spring, early summer, we saw the coming up of the George Floyd movement, and that movement gave tremendous surge of momentum to the Tax Amazon movement. Also, and this is important because when the Black Lives Matter movement broke out, there were some leaders of NGOs and, you know, BLM organizations who said that taxing Amazon is not a Black issue, and we are trying to, you know, they accused us of co-opting the movement, and they said we should stop organizing for it. And what we said was that I don't think a few of us, regardless of our race, can decide what is a Black issue. We should go to ordinary people, you know, people who, you know, thousands of people who are participating in the BLM protests. They can decide. We did not capitulate to that kind of idea. We continued circulating our Tax Amazon ballot initiative petition, you know, the petition to put that on the ballot. And it was incredible, the support we got from the BLM protests. You know, we were blown away by how much support we got. We collected 20,000 signatures at the protest in the first 20 days that we started circulating that petition. And in total, we collected over 30,000 signatures. That was the most crucial tactic for winning the Amazon tax on the city council, because when they saw the 30,000 signatures for the ballot initiative petition, it was clear to big business and their Democratic Party representatives in City Hall, if this went to the ballot, it was very likely to win. It was a large tax. And so they were forced, because of the success of our tactic, to make a concession to our movement. And so the Amazon tax passed on the city council instead. That Amazon tax that we won last year was very much a victory of the socialist movement. It was a victory of the Black Lives Matter movement. And it was an example of how it is crucial. I mean, we have to have debates and discussions inside movements, and we have to have accountable leadership who will not sell us out and make sure that ordinary people, working people, get to decide where the movement should go.
The issues of the policing apparatus and the growing militarism of the police, that is, of course, directed against the poor and is directed most specifically at people of African ancestry, brown people, and so on. So how is that incorporated in and becoming a crucial issue of what you, in your work as a city council member, were able to lead and accomplish? We see the liberal Democrats, they capitulated and are retreating from that and indeed criticizing those who were more involved. And that goes for, of course, former President Obama to pundits at MSNBC. But we're seeing it more and more and more. So how do you respond and understand? And to what extent was the reality of that kind of oppression that people of African ancestry face from the policing apparatus built into your work as a city council member?
As a socialist, and as a Marxist, we are fighting for a society free of oppression. As Malcolm X said, we do not believe that the racism and oppression that we see around us can be ended on the basis of an exploitative system like capitalism. You know, as Malcolm X said, you cannot have capitalism without racism. And you can say the same thing about sexism and other forms of oppression that we see globally. So we took our responsibilities in relation to the Black Lives Matter movement very seriously. In fact, since 2014, we have been outspoken about our support for the Black Lives Matter movement. There was a time when no other elected representative in Seattle would march alongside Black Lives Matter or even say Black Lives Matter. It was actually a testament to the strength of the movement last year that it forced Democratic Party politicians to at least pay lip service the demands that were being raised by the movement, which is why you saw many politicians, including Seattle City Council Democrats, saying Black Lives Matter, defund the police, and so on and so forth. There's been a historic, shameful retreat by the Democratic Party from the demands of the Black Lives Matter movement. The defeat that the Democrats have faced in this November, both in Seattle and nationally, and they have drawn the exact wrong conclusion from it. And we were too radical. We made too many inroads into the BLM movement, and we actually need to go back to the center. Well, that's the exact wrong thing to do. That is exactly what fuels the growth of the right, not to mention the Trumpist wing of the Republican Party. It is that move to the right that is not only represented by the retreat from the defund police and the other demands of the BLM movement, it is that move to the center has resulted in the fact that the Biden administration, Democratic Congress, and fortunately even the squad have completely failed to deliver on any of the demands of the working class, whether it is $15 an hour or Medicare for all. As a matter of fact, those are demands that will unify the working class, would actually help build a much stronger movement, sort of really undermine the ability of the right wing to take advantage of the vacuum that exists, because the Democratic Party is failing to reach out to many working people who end up becoming for the right. I completely disagree with the Democratic Party in their retreat from the demands of the BLM movement. And in fact, that happened in Seattle also. What we have demonstrated through our work in our office is that ultimately it was the Socialist Council office that was consistent in our support for defund. But we didn't just stop there. We also said that, as a matter of fact, there are some working people who may not agree with defund, but that we can build broader unity on the basis of the demand for an elected community oversight with full powers over the police, including hiring and firing and subpoena powers over the police officers, which really struck a strong chord with a lot of people. You know, that brings up the question of leadership. Once again, what kind of leadership do we want in our social movements? A lot of young people are thinking about it. We need to fight for a society free of oppression. That can't happen on the basis of capitalism. Our task is to become the best fighters against oppression. We also have to raise the banner of socialism and explain to people that we have to build solidarity among the working class on a principled basis, not by cutting corners on the reality of racism, you know, sort of denying that racism exists, but actually doing quite the opposite by explaining to people that we need to stand in solidarity, regardless of our own personal race or allegiances. We need to stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. That's building broad-based unity that we can actually fight together for a society free of oppression and exploitation. And in fact, this is where young people are tending. I mean, one of the reasons the George Floyd protests ended up becoming the largest ever street protest movement in U.S. history was precisely because there was multiracial working class solidarity around the demands of the Black Lives Matter movement. There was multiracial working class solidarity in anger against police violence and systematic racism by the police departments across the nation. That is how you got 26 million people out on the streets, that it is possible to build that kind of solidarity in our fight against both racism and economic exploitation.
The recall vote, the system was exploding in response to your aggressive ideas and the hearts and minds that you were capturing in the working class as a result of them. So tell us about your understanding of the recall vote. Who was behind it? Where things are at right now?
Really appropriate, Mimi, that your question about the recall came right after our discussion about the Black Lives Matter movement, because that the recall attack against our office is really part of the many attacks against the Black Lives Matter movement. It is not coincidental that two of the three so-called charges against me in the recall ballot were related to my participation in and solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. This was very much a racist and anti-BLM recall. They attempted to go after my office, but they've also attempted to criminalize protest around the nation. You know, so many thousands of peaceful protesters facing arrest charges. And we've seen now fully 81 bills in Republican-led states that are attempting to criminalize peaceful protests. All of this represents a reaction against protest movements, the fear that the ruling class feels at this kind of protest. And in fact, What scares the ruling class the most is the multiracial working class solidarity we saw in the Black Lives Matter protest. That is also what made Martin Luther King Jr. such a threat to the ruling class in his time, when he started recognizing that the fight against Black oppression and the fight for Black freedom goes hand in hand with working class emancipation, the continuation of that struggle where more and more young people are recognizing what kind of society we need, and that a society that exploits workers is absolutely not a society where you could possibly end racism. The ruling class of such a society absolutely and very consciously relies on divide and rule strategies as represented by sexism, racism, and other forms of division. It is no coincidence that the recall against us also was part of that attack. And it was also very much a big business and wealthy initiated attack. To your question of, who was behind it, well, it was a veritable who's who of Seattle's wealthy that supported the recall. A whole spectrum of corporate landlords supported the recall. One I'll name is CEO George Petrie, who is the CEO of a company called Goodman Real Estate. Goodman Real Estate owns $2.5 billion worth of properties all over North America, including in Canada. Goodman Real Estate was, in 2019, the most evicting landlord in Seattle. This guy, the CEO, if all of this was not enough, he also happens to be the largest Trump donor from Washington State. If you look at the profile of the prominent donors, 500 Republican donors, over 130 Trump donors have backed the recall. In addition to that, over 100 CEOs and corporate executives. So this was a racist, right-wing, big business-backed recall attempt against our office. It wasn't just like a few corporations and landlords getting together. It was the entire system. This whole saga of the recall shows you how every institution under capitalism will unite against any kind of working class attempt at changing society. It's a reminder that we cannot underestimate what we are up against. Our solidarity campaign against the recall, the campaign to vote no on the recall, is now ahead. We held our press conference this morning to announce our apparent victory, but we are still going to be curing the ballots that have been challenged. The point is that we have won despite everything stacked against us. It's a real testament both to the length to which the ruling class will go against us when we start winning victories, and also that it can be overcome. It is a David and Goliath fight, but David can win.
Kishama Sawant, all I can say is you dared to struggle and you dared to win with the socialist agenda for the working people of Seattle. So keep on keeping on. This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.